This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
The GOP has resurrected its 2016 platform for the Republican National Convention this week that will nominate President Trump for a second term. Agriculture holds a prominent place in the policy's blueprint. The GOP platform calls for less ag regulation that has raised consumer costs, expanding science-based trade, no GMO labeling, and more rural broadband. Ending the last administration's Waters of the U.S. rule, or WOTUS, widely criticized for micromanaging puddles and ditches on farms, was part of the 2016 platform and achieved this year. American Farm Bureau's Don Parrish, when the new rule was finalized.
We're very hopeful that this is, number one, going to be very protective of water quality, but number two, get the federal government out of trying to regulate land use with a clean water statute.
Included in that were exclusions for prairie potholes, ditches, stock ponds, and other land features that fill in when it rains, and for prior converted crop land.
Things that were converted back, you know, around the turn of the last century, the early 1900s, that have been farmed and will continue to be farmed, will be some of the most productive agricultural land in the country.
The renewed 2016 GOP platform also calls for expanding farm trade while insisting U.S. trading partners adhere to science-based standards in food regulation, part of the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement and talks with the United Kingdom and the European Union. The platform imposes mandatory labeling of GMO foods proven to be safe and life-saving in developing nations while calling for universal broadband coverage to link rural America with the global economy. The Department of Agriculture has extended the deadline to apply for the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program to Friday, September 11th. According to the National Pork Board Chief Operating Officer Jerry Flint, producers with approved applications will receive 100% of their calculated payment.
So according to the USDA, CFAP is assisting America's farmers and ranchers to ensure that they get through this pandemic and continue to produce enough food and fiber to feed America and the world. And CFAP is just one of many ways USDA is helping producers weather the impacts of the pandemic.
Information about the CFAP program can be found online at USDA.gov, in addition to the Pork Checkoff.
The Pork Checkoff has a number of resources in place, and producers can go to pork.org to find that information, including the information about the CFAP program and the extension to September 11th.
Again, that was the National Pork Board Chief Operating Officer Jerry Flint. In other ag news, from Washington, Congress will not be considering any coronavirus relief until September, and the streamlined package won't likely include agriculture. Senate Republicans indicate they plan to introduce a skinny bill next month, according to the Hagstrom Report. The Senate returns to session on September 8th, and the House is scheduled to return for committee meetings on the 8th, with the full House returning to session September 14th. The delay sets up speculation that general coronavirus aid may be included in spending bills that Congress must pass by September 30th, the end of the current fiscal year. Congress must also pass the spending bills to avoid a government shutdown. Many in agriculture agree more aid is needed for farmers and ranchers facing losses from COVID-19. The failed HEALS Act in the Senate would have provided an additional $20 billion for agriculture. The CARES Act included $14 billion for agriculture, and the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, or CFAP, includes $16 billion for ag. In other news, as I mentioned in the livestock report earlier this morning, the USDA says placements of cattle in feedlots during July totaled 1.892 million head. That's 11% higher than July of 2019. That number is larger than what industry experts had predicted going into last Friday's report. Feeding operations needed supply, especially cattle, that could be turned around in a short amount of time. Most of the placements weighed between 700 and 900 pounds. The cattle placed in July will be marketed through the winter and into early spring. By weight, placements of cattle less than 600 pounds totaled 420,000 head. Placements between 6 and 699 pounds were at 315,000 head, and placements of cattle between 700 and 799 pounds totaled 435,000 head. In heavier weights, cattle between 800 and 899 pounds totaled 458,000 head, 900 to 999 pounds totaled 195,000 head, and 70,000 of those placements totaled more than 1,000 pounds. July cattle marketings were at 1.99 million head, 1% lower than last year. The total number of cattle on feed as of August 1st was at 11,284,000. That's 2% above 2019 and the highest inventory for the month of August since the series of reports first began in 1996. Nebraska was among the highest states with 2.22 million cattle on feed. Moving on to today's feature story, over the next few months, growers will be making their buying decisions for the 2021 season. Commodity prices may have some growers adjusting plans for the upcoming season, however, and as you begin to plan for next year, agronomist Tim Latch advises not to cut crop inputs. The Director of Agronomy for North America from Koch Agronomic Services not only knows the science behind nitrogen stabilizers, he's also a farmer himself who knows the risks associated with applying unprotected nitrogen. Latch says research shows that stabilizers can help increase yield, and that can potentially increase profitability.
As a grower, when margins get tight, I certainly understand the temptation to look at input costs. But what we have to really be cautious about is taking a step in a direction that might lower our yields or compromise plant health. And so I tend to view nitrogen stabilizers as another tool in the toolbox to manage production risk on your nitrogen investment. Seasonal weather is one of the largest factors of risk or uncertainty in the farming operation. So if the weather favors nitrogen losses without a stabilizer, we as farmers are subject to the risk of significantly reducing yields.
From an agronomic point of view, stabilizers actually protect applied nitrogen.
Stabilizers, also known as enhanced efficiency fertilizers, really work to protect your nitrogen investment against three different forms of loss. We can lose nitrogen to denitrification, to ammonia volatilization, and also to leaching. And so if we apply nitrogen without a stabilizer, we're subject to the forces of nature, could potentially lose substantial percentages of our applied nitrogen. And not only does that hurt you from an economic standpoint, it also hurts us from a sustainability standpoint because that nitrogen gets lost to the environment.
Crop solutions like the products from Koch Agronomic Services can save input costs with optimized nitrogen rates. Latch says that instead of trying to achieve higher yield by putting down more nitrogen than's needed, because it's unprotected, stabilizers and enhanced efficiency fertilizer protect what's put down in the first place, yield in the first place.
One of the analogies we often use is if you have a pasture full of cattle and you have a broken fence, so you face the risk of your cattle getting away, the way you fix that problem is not to put more cattle in the pasture. It's to make a capital investment to fix the fence. And nitrogen is very similar to that. What we're doing is we're trying to make an investment in protection of the nitrogen asset that we put out in the field so that we can get more of that nitrogen into the plant, realizing yield potential.
Depending on where you live and what the 4R nutrient stewardship best practices are for your area, because as we know here in mid-Illinois, soil types can change from township to township, an agronomist or retailer can help you determine which solution is best for your operation.
This year on my own farm, because profit margins are tight, I selected a more cost-effective source of nitrogen, that being anhydrous ammonia, and I chose to stabilize that ammonia with Koch's product Centuro, which features the nitrification inhibitor pronitridine that holds nitrogen in the ammonium form three times longer and protects me against nitrogen loss. If a grower is surface applying or shallow incorporating urea, they may want to choose a different product like Koch's Anvol, which is a urease inhibitor featuring patented chemistry called duramide that works very much like agritane, but is about 30% longer lasting than agritane. And if a grower is facing all three forms of loss, they may want to choose Koch's Super U, which is a finished urea fertilizer featuring dual integrated active ingredients that protects against all three forms of loss.
With the right tools, growers have an opportunity to improve their operations bottom line. As a grower and agronomist, Latch shares this advice.
Technology advances every year, so take a look at the solutions that are available to help you improve your bottom line. Talk to your local retailer because they have localized knowledge. They can show you what's working most effectively in your area and help you put together a 4R management plan for 21 that will increase yield potential.
And again, that was Tim Latch Latch, the Director of Agronomy for North America from Koch Agronomic Services. Moving along now into State of Illinois Ag News, we have your latest crop progress and condition report from last week. And with the report, we'll join Mark Sloysener with the National Ag Statistics Service in Springfield.
Cooler and drier are the words for last week's weather. Temperatures averaged 2.4 degrees below normal, and rainfall averaged just over 1/10 of an inch for the week, compared to 7/10 normally. Temperatures ranged from slightly below normal to nearly 4 degrees below normal across the prairie state. There was an average of 6.8 days suitable for field work last week. Topsoil moisture supplies declined to 6% very short, 29 short, 64 adequate, and 1% surplus. The Illinois corn crop has reached the doe stage or beyond on 93% of acres, compared to 69 last year and 88 for the five-year average. 47% of acres have reached the dent stage compared to 51 normally. The condition of the crop was 6% very poor to poor, 22 fair, and 72% good to excellent. That is worse than the previous week. Soybeans in Illinois are setting pods on 92% of acres, compared to 76 last year and 89 normally. Soybean conditions were reported as 6% very poor to poor, 21 fair, and 73% good to excellent. That is also worse than 1 week earlier. For alfalfa hay, the third cutting is 69% complete. Pasture conditions were rated 10% very poor to poor, 22 fair, and 68% good to excellent, nearly unchanged from the previous week. And in other news, NASS recently mailed questionnaires to farmers around the country for the Ag Yield Survey. NASS will use it to update yield forecasts for corn and soybeans and publish results on September 11th. In addition, NASS mailed questionnaires to pork producers for the quarterly Hogs and Pigs report, which will be published on September 24. NASS is also contacting crop producers to finalize small grains production and update statistics for grains in storage. Each individual report is confidential by law, but they contribute to the state totals and averages. This has been Mark Schleusener with the Heartland Region, Illinois Field Office of USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service in Springfield.
In other state ag news, harvest is just around the corner, and the Illinois Harvest Permit will again be available for farmers hauling corn and soybeans this fall. The permit is from the Illinois Department of Transportation, according to Farm Bureau's Mark Gebhartz.
Just a reminder to folks out here that starting September 1st and running through December 31st, the Illinois Harvest Season Permit will again be available through the Illinois Department of Transportation. That permit allows farmers that are hauling ag commodities to run 10% over the legal registered gross axle weight of the truck on state highways. But you have to get the permit, okay? And so you also have to get a permit through your local township or county road authority if you're going to operate on those roads in their jurisdiction as well. So I would encourage folks, if they want to get that permit, that can begin on September 1st through Illinois Department of Transportation.
And you can find out more info on the permit by going to ilfb.org and typing Illinois Harvest Permit in the search box. Farmland values are holding steady here in Illinois. Brad Zwilling is a data analyst for Farm Business Farm Management at the U of I.
I look at a number that comes out from the USDA. They publish a farmland value, and then they also publish the Illinois farm real estate value. And the farm real estate value brings into play farmland and farm buildings. You know, a lot of times when we sell those farms, that we buy farms, there might be some buildings on those, you know, a grain bin or a machine shed. So it doesn't have a big impact, but it's kind of interesting to bring that in as well. In 2020, we saw that number just tick up a little bit. We went to $7,400 an acre. That's a 1.6% increase from $7,280. So it's interesting to see that, and you know, this is the last 3 years prior to that we had, or this is the third year in a row we've seen slight increases. So we've been hanging out at this $7,100 to $7,500 an acre for the last 8 years. We've kind of been in a, you know, kind of just as leveled off and just holding steady right now. We can use that information to kind of think about our balance sheets. You know, that's the first thing we think about. You know, farmland's been a good investment. It's held there. You know, and in your balance sheet, whatever value you're putting on there, and most people want to put that fair market value, they may have paid $10,000 an acre for that, and that should have held at that $10,000 an acre. They should see farmland sales around the area should be holding, and that makes those balance sheets still look strong.
By comparison, in Iowa, the latest farm real estate average value is $7,070 an acre, $6,600 in Indiana, $3,400 in Missouri, and $4,850 in Wisconsin. And moving on into your latest ag weather, much of Illinois is going to be experiencing a late summer heat wave starting today into tomorrow, but we should see cooler temperatures as we move towards the Labor Day holiday.
Well, we just got a very warm air mass that's moving into the area that's going to provide temperatures well above normal temperatures, in some cases well into the 90s. The fact that we have not had widespread rainfall. The ground is very dry, so there's no chance to evaporate water out of the ground. So that's going to allow temperatures to get a lot warmer. The possible plus side is that we've got a lot of ag fields that were damaged by the derecho 2 weeks ago, so they probably won't be pumping out as much moisture into the air as it could possibly be. So we may be hot, but it'll be humid, but may not be overly humid.
That was meteorologist Brian Pierce with the National Weather Service office in the Quad Cities. And again, he says cooler temps are anticipated by the Labor Day weekend. And finally, in local ag news for your Tuesday, the American Farmland Trust will be collaborating with the Illinois Sustainable Ag Partnership and the Upper Macoupin Creek Watershed Partnership to host an informative webinar set for Thursday, September 3rd from 10 a.m. to 11:45 a.m. The free webinar will focus on managing phosphorus and conservation cropping systems. Presentations will highlight current research and management tips for farmers and their advisors on cover crops and other best management practices that reduce non-point source phosphorus loading in Illinois. Participants will be offered 1.5 hours of continuing education credits in nutrient management. Speakers for the webinar include Dr. Heidi Peterson, Vice President of Ag Research and Conservation at the Sand County Foundation, Dr. Fabian Fernandez, an associate professor of the Department of Soil, Water, and Climate at the University of Minnesota, and Dr. Nathan Nelson, associate professor of agronomy at Kansas State. The partnership will also include a 17-member steering committee comprised of 8 farmers, 2 reps of M&M Service Company, 2 reps of CHS and Shipman, 2 representatives of the USDA Natural Resource Conservation Service Office in Macoupin County, 1 representative from the Macoupin County Soil and Water Conservation District, 1 representative from the Illinois Stewardship Alliance, and 1 representative of the American Farmland Trust. The main reason every year for this Managing Phosphorus workshop is that the Illinois Upper Macoupin Creek watershed is listed by the Illinois Science Assessment and the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Strategy as one of the highest non-point source phosphorus loading watersheds in Illinois. And that'll conclude your Ag News here for a Tuesday morning. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by an email at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Tuesday morning, August 25th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.